Good morning, everyone. It's Spillo here, Brad Spillane. It's the Men's Mental Health Show, back for our third show of the year. And it's just the A-team today, John Millam and myself, and we're looking forward to putting on a good show for you once again. And we hope everybody's well. It's been quite a reduction in the weather over the last couple of days. I think we got to 37 on Sunday, and it's a balmy 15 at the moment. So it's very chilly out there, considering all things. How are you, John?
G'day, Spillo. I'm terrific. I'm grateful. I come to the mountains, get a little bit of mountain weather, right? Get to pull my first jumper out for 2024. So
see, that's smart. You know, my daughter came and visited with a boyfriend the other week, and I sent her, as I do, 2-3 messages. Hmm. It's going to be cold. Hmm. Bring some warm clothes. Rug up, plenty of blankets in the caravan for you guys. And of course, they just, shirts and jeans, yeah.
Kids.
Well, she's 21 now, but, you know.
Yeah, but
still, yeah. Hmm. But anyway, you know, it makes me feel like a responsible father in the end.
Yeah, well done, right? There's two challenges in that. First of all, you know, being responsible enough to make, you know, to still care enough to care. And then the second challenge is to, you know, let the result go, because it'll never be about, you know, oh, good idea, Dad.
Yeah. I wasn't searching for that, but, you know, I'll take it. Thanks, John.
Yeah. So good. But I'll tell you it was a good idea, but they won't, right? So
No.
Which is, you know, I guess how it's designed to work. Mm. We seem to be bashing our heads against a design process, yes, right? Because all kids are the same.
Yeah.
But, you know. Mine don't listen to me.
Well, I often say I think I only started to mature when I turned 40.
Yeah, mine was 50. Yeah. 45. No, 45, yeah. I'll give you 45. So, yeah, that's where I started growing up, actually.
Yeah. So, why is that, do you think?
Because there was no need for... there were things that I embraced that were misunderstandings that kept me kind of... You know, I had a go at it occasionally, but there were a lot of blokes around me who never even tried, right? Yeah, they're still, to this day, they're still, I would consider men children, right? But the universe intervened in my case. I had to grow up because my missus had different projects to attend to,
right?
With up in heaven. So it was interesting that, you know, I was forced to grow up. And in that... I realised one of the first things, I got quite annoyed at the rest of, you know, manhood around me, you know, the people I'd once considered great mates and a lot of fun. I suddenly sort of view them through a different perspective, which is probably what, the generation we who bagged us,
yes,
saw it long, saying they were looking at immaturity.
Mm.
That led to the second great project, which the first was to grow up and the second was to actually learn to use maturity in a healthy and accepting way and not sort of use it to make me angry and annoying and judgmental.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, because I think I went through many years of that. It's an angry and judgmental way.
It's the obvious one because it's...
Well, it's the easiest one.
Yeah, because it's something interesting to talk about in a theme today, I think, because we tend to be looking for, oh, if I do this, I've solved my problems, right? So the idea of, I now realise that I should, you know, I can grow up, that I can gain some level of maturity.
Right.
But, of course, that's the beginning of... a solution, because their nuance, what you eventually encounter and understand, is everything is unique, right? Mm. And we are a complex and nuanced and, you know, messy and chaotic and you know, vast set of processes and understandings and views and positions and perspectives and frames, right? And all of them need to be navigated. Now, it's really important to learn some thematic ways of dealing with life, because you can bunch things together.
Sure.
But there is not one way.
No.
And once we start the journey of maturity, which I think we can probably call it a degree of emotional intelligence, right? It's about...
Oh, absolutely.
And I would equate common sense and emotional intelligence. Common sense is the term we used to describe emotional intelligence before someone wrote a book about it, right? Daniel Goleman, introduced emotional intelligence 2.0 to the world. Yeah. Before that, it was just, you know, our grandparents called it common sense, right? Yeah. And now... Yeah, you know, common sense was defined by being uncommon. That's the thing.
It's not common.
Yeah. That's because there weren't a lot of mature people around. You can be immature not because you choose to be, right? There's a few blokes I know that would choose to be 16 for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
Right? But there's also things that interfere. Like if you don't have an opportunity to step into the responsibilities of adulthood,
right?
And there are many people... who have limited resources around that, you know, or limited role models. Imagine if you're, you know, for instance, a slave, someone who is kept enclosed or limited in their scope through no fault of their own, they won't be completely mature human because, you know, they've had certain aspects denied to them.
Mm.
Trauma does that. Trauma inhibits our ability to go into certain places that would be considered like a mature adulting. Misunderstandings, cultural restrictions. Mm. You know, it must be very difficult for women to understand the full range of the human, you know, maturity and human condition in certain countries that inhibit their ability to interact.
Yes.
You know, or learn.
Yeah, it is, you know, when you talk about trauma, I think in a lot of cases we tend to put up a wall, don't we? You know, as
sometimes the restriction can be one we choose to introduce or to build,
right,
to protect ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's one of those paradoxes of the human condition that to be... open and challenged, you know, to accept challenges, you have to have a secure base.
Yeah.
So that secure base can be something external or something, you know, internal. Mm. So, for instance, if you've got a safe home, right, you might not leave that if you're worried about, you know, if you're you don't feel safe in the open world, right? You know, it's the same internally. You know, psychologically, we build walls to protect ourselves.
Is, in your experience, it's a question I asked Bodhi on a number of times over the years. So, in your, because you've been a life coach now for
15 years,
right? Have you noticed, what I'm saying here is when I first went and, you know, sought help or advice or, you know, realized that I need someone else to sort of help me along this path here to get me out of where I was, I kind of got stuck in a rut, didn't know how to, you know, go be forthcoming or what it was the therapist or the particular person I was talking to was asking of me.
Mm. Yeah.
Are we getting better at that, do you think?
But here's...
We need a nudge, don't we?
Well, here's the interesting thing, right? We are getting better at content.
Yeah.
Right? The world has a different language, right?
Right.
We were just talking to a young bloke with a coffee shop and he has...
Ryan over the road.
And he has a language... He has a language now. You know, he had his challenges and so on, and you know, went through life. Saw Bodhi, right? Was helped that by that. But it was interesting because he has the language to connect with that content around self development, self awareness, right? And there, you know, you have a motivation to do it now because you know, so you get a sense that there is something more. You're aware of it. Where I think we're breaking down, right? Because we have more people needing more help than ever before, right? And I suspect there are two reasons for it. So, you know, research is a little equivocal on this, but I suspect there's two reasons. The first, people now know how to articulate their need better,
right?
And there literally is what they call VUCO, which is a complicated. Variable, it's complicated, it's ambiguous, and it's unavailable. Like it's the complication of society, they call it VUCO.
Right.
So, and when life gets really complicated, right, that can be overwhelming, right? So it triggers you, right? So here you've got, you have more awareness and you have more complication. So I think those things combine for, you know, what some people are calling an epidemic of mental challenge, right? Well-being. I think there's always been a lot of this going on. A lot of it wasn't called out, like our fathers walked around with all sorts of PTSD and complex PTSD and so on from military service and, you know, from being, you know, losing their fathers and so on.
They just
didn't call it that.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing. Having content and having the need and calling out that need doesn't link them together.
Right.
So what we're doing is somebody's telling me about, say, oh, these are the conditions of complex PTSD, which is essentially a form of response we make to essentially a long and sustained abuse or trauma.
Yeah.
And you can see that happening for a lot of young people because of the psychological and emotional abuse. So, for instance, say, you know, like a lot of adults are being diagnosed as ADHD.
Yeah, yeah.
And ADHD, undiagnosed in the old days, even unrecognized, meant that a lot of people were constantly given the feedback that they were useless.
Yeah, yeah.
That they were lazy, that they were unmotivated, that they were worthless, they were stupid, right? Mm. And the opposite was the truth, right? Yeah. It's like I think of it as like telling a short person when they're failing to reach the top shelf that they're stupid because they can't reach the top shelf.
Yeah, it's no different.
It's ridiculous, right? But can you imagine being told something you intrinsically know is not true but being blamed for something that you can't do anything
about?
You've
got no control over,
And having that at home, at school, at church, at play, at sport, whatever it is. Constantly the reframe is you're stupid, you're worthless, you're lazy, you're whatever.
Yeah.
That, you are now getting, I think, the consequences of that level of sustained abuse because kids turn it in on themselves, they believe it, they start becoming their own perpetrator because they'll tell themselves whenever anything goes wrong.
They'll lock themselves in their room, stay on their game consoles, not go isolate.
They'll build walls around because no one wants to walk into a punch. No. If they know anything they try will receive the feedback of being told terrible things, they won't even try. But even worse than that, then the language of rejection is anger and isolation and, you know, numbing behaviours, so they'll self-medicate.
Sure.
All of these things come out of the fact that they've had this sustained, directed abuse, and the consequences of that is complex PTSD, developing neurodivergency, untreated neurodivergency, anxiety, depression, all of those elements, and then of course suicidal ideation, which is everywhere with youth,
and the parents, you know, and my generation and yours, it's a common theme, isn't it? Oh, he's not doing anything. He's isolating his room. He's not eating well. He's not socializing. He's not exercising. He won't take his medication.
He refuses to comply.
I've tried everything.
And
what we're essentially being is hard on the person, but not the problem.
Exactly. We are following a set script
of our previous.
And in fact, everything that they've experienced, we're just adding,
passing it on. Yeah.
Yeah, because you know they've been told at school that they you know if only they tried, right? Or you know, clever kid, but never gives any effort, right? And you go home, and that's exactly the dialogue you get.
Yeah.
Right? So your parents it's even more damaging because your parents are meant to be a safe space. So you're meant to know that your parents will have your back.
Yeah.
How do we know that? Well, that's intrinsically in us, right? Yeah. There is a certain period of dependency. Humans have the longest mammalian dependency in the game because we have the largest, resource sucking brain, right? So it takes a long time for kids to develop. So that first 7 years, we are completely dependent psychologically as the brain develops. And parents at that point are already identifying their kids as lazy, provocative, non-compliant, aggressive. Right.
So when those parents then reach out and they say, make the call to you and such as
sometimes,
I did.
Sometimes, which is great.
With my son. What, because there's roles to be played or changes that need to be made or efforts that need to be placed. From both, me and from my son.
Absolutely, And this is why I think it's actually hardwired into us, right? Our organisation and adaption includes third-party input.
Yeah.
Because my experience, in our situation, my experience is it doesn't take much to redirect the focus of a young person. It could be just a couple of chats.
Yes.
Right? And that all of a sudden they've gone off
and
they've started to almost turn everything around.
Yeah.
And, of course, people who are wounded further might have more complex, they can still adapt, right? Mm. There is a definite opportunity, recovery, normalisation. All of these things can happen, right? Even with kids who have... are struggling with awful, awful background. What's interesting is the challenge to change because every one of us operates in a system, right? Mm. No one is unique.
Yeah.
Even the most self-made man is part of a social system.
Mm.
Him, his intimate partners, his parents and family, who he brings in around to support and become a business or commercial muse. All of these people, people are inspired by others. Mm. They're responsible to others. They're provided by for others. They provide for others. This is a complex system. One person has a individual system. Right, and what we don't do is when something goes wrong, we look at the individual, and often ignore the system.
Yeah,
but a young person, right up until they sort of disappear into their own personal lives, are essentially part of the family of origin system. And one of the really important areas to look at is the interactions, the system engagement. Mm. So parents, often. You can imagine the challenge in meeting. Like if you're in work and you have two reporting lines and your boss comes over and says, I need this by tomorrow. This is really essential to the company's well-being. And then the other boss, the other reporting line, comes over and says, no, I need this by tomorrow and this is essential to the company's well-being. And you go, which one do I drop? Right, which one do I focus my attention, my limited resources on? That decision is crucial because one will be happy and one will be sad, one will be praising and one will be punishing, right? One will be good for your long-term future and the other might be disastrous, right? All of this at the same time in the same situation, and it's not uncommon. I've encountered that at work.
Yeah, sure.
Imagine that is your everyday at home. So you've got,
Mum saying this or dad doing that,
broken, families that are apart, right, or differently constituted to be woke about it. And both with perfectly, valid reasons, they have the same goal, the same purpose. Oh, we want the best for you, right, and my belief is the best for you is this, and the other parent goes, my belief is the best for you is that, and then the kid has to navigate, I have limited resources and framework, if you'll be happy if I do this and sad if I do that, you'll be happy if I do that, how do you manage that? So one of the challenges is then any kind of intervention, any kind of support, you have to look at the intimate system And so the challenge may be to change the parent.
Sure.
Because the kid will just, with what happens when both bosses come and they go, and one goes, oh, actually, no, you do yours first and I'll wait.
Yeah.
Suddenly, it's not gonna work. All the stress is off, though. Mm. Okay, well, I've got guidance, right? Mm. I don't have to stress about meeting the needs of, alternative. I can actually meet both needs in a satisfactory way because they work it out. Mm. Mm. My priority is less important than yours. Mm. We'll tell him to do yours first and mine second.
Yeah, okay, I got you. Yeah.
So that changes the outcome.
Well, the whole dynamics have changed then, haven't they?
Yeah, and not only do you give them a chance to relax and just get on with it, you actually role model conflict resolution.
Well, that's right, yeah. Right.
So allowing, and so often, right, I've seen young people look out at the situation and then they are the mature ones in that. They're operating in a, because they're trying and they step up to start parenting their parents.
Sure.
And that can be a long-term disaster. Because there is purpose in being an adolescent and being a child.
Mm. Right. God, I've got so many thoughts going through my head. I'm playing so many roles here at the moment myself,
And it's okay, as a parent, I've just been triggered again, and it's really important, and to go back to the core, right? I go back to what got me into a place where I said, this is what I asked for.
Yeah.
I reminded that it's not about ego, it's about purpose.
So can I, I imagine that now, with all the knowledge and all the, books and stuff and you listen to and because I get a lot of friends that call me up and ask me for advice on their kids. And I really don't think I'm a good example of a good father.
No, well, don't be a good example, for goodness sake.
Yeah, right.
But you're never a prophet in your own land.
Well, okay, yeah.
Your kids aren't going to listen to you because you've done the work.
Yeah.
Other people's kids will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I meant to that.
No. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I see that every day. I have to accept that.
Right? Yeah.
Because
that's just something.
My kids, I remember, they used to get, when I was sort of very enthusiastic about coaching, I remember my son would walk past and I'd go, oh, and he'd go, don't try that coaching, voodoo, on me. And I'd go, come on, and no, cut that out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd be sitting in the car, they'd be trapped, and I'd go, I'm gonna, and they go, no, we're not listening, no. it's much easier to. That's why I thought, this third party is intrinsic in us.
Yeah.
So just ring someone up and go, hey, I'd like. Super nanny. That was the whole show. And gosh, she didn't get the show because of a, warm connection, right? Mm. All she'd come into was a family, and she'd transform families simply by being a third party advice person.
Mm. Mm.
I think that.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield. is that the one?
No, that's the comedy nanny. You remember this show called Super Nanny where
it was more of a reality show.
Yeah, it was a reality.
Yeah, of course.
They'd get this governess to come in and
that's right.
Teach them about naughty corners and things like that.
Yes,
right.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm. And, it was American, so the kids were often, outrageous, right? Yeah. But, it was, and I think that power of, because we go back to pull out a term, heuristics, which is the science of our biases,
right? Yeah.
So we've got they've identified 100 plus biases, right, that are common in society, right? So most people know things like confirmation bias. Okay. So that if we see something that someone we know and like also does, we're likely to do it.
We're likely to, yeah.
Right? Things like proximity bias.
Yeah.
We see things close to us as being better than things further away. You know, like all of these kind of... our brain operates... Essentially what it is allowing our brain to take shortcuts.
Sure.
And the reason for that is we are a... It's a very resource-hungry organ. And so it's developed, it's adapted to using as little resource as possible.
Sure.
So, you know, it takes shortcuts. So when we're trying to perceive the world, we perceive it in a way that says...
The easiest.
Yeah. How can I save time and effort? But interestingly, we do that like, you know, when we look at, we take in lots of like data, our systems see everything, but our brain can't process everything. So it has to have a series of rules to say it's like a street directory, GPS.
Categorizing.
It cuts stuff out,
right?
So when you see the world, you take all that data in and then you delete some because it's repeated or irrelevant. You distort some to put it into a perspective you can process. Or you, delete, distort, or you change the scale of stuff, right? So when you look at a map, you can see a landscape, but it's two-dimensional. You understand the keys to a map, which allow you to reinstate things, right? Or so the deletions are restored, or you add back, you add stuff that that gives you the key, right? So you then interpret that, and then you change the distortion. So you see something green, you realize that's a forest.
Yeah.
Even though it's a block of green color.
Yeah.
You see lines on the road, you realize they're
roads.
Yeah. Lines on the map are roads. So you change those distortions back. So that helps. What's interesting is it's sometimes we're caught by the gaps. So when you look at a map, you can't really tell if it's steep or narrow. Yeah, they have contour lines, but it doesn't really tell you whether it's easy, the country, or tough country. It doesn't tell you what the type of trees are or what the people are there, so you can make assumptions. Those assumptions can be wrong.
Sure.
So when you're looking at the world and you're taking in the data and you're distorting and deleting things, and then you make assumptions about the things you're not getting, your reality is formed based on that info. Yeah. What we need to do sometimes is go, oh, my reality isn't working for me.
Yeah, that guy got that wrong.
Yeah. So I need to restore or rechange and change my reality.
Sure.
So this is why you hear, people say, oh, the world is actually made up of how I see the world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true. The good news about that is
flat earthers?
Well, they see the world. I watched a YouTube video.
Yeah.
And this bloke had a picture like it was a rocket taking off.
Yeah.
And they were talking. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah.
But they were talking, saying, "Look at this. The horizon's flat.
It's not moving. It's no
curvature." So he said, "This tells me the Earth is flat." Yeah. They are seeing that picture the way they want
to see it.
Yeah. So the good news is, let's restore some of the data back to give us a different perspective. If this truth, this reality, isn't working for us, you have the power to change that reality.
Sure.
And that goes to something like a negative bias versus a positive bias. You can be optimistic. Why? Because you can add more information that'll find the truth in that. You can find reasons to be optimistic. You can find reasons to be grateful. Why? Because a negative bias has probably removed them from your awareness. You can bring them back if you look. So you can actually see reasons to keep going. You can find hope. You can find purpose. You can find optimism. You can find gratitude if you go back and look again. Does that make any sense at all?
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, no, well said. Let's just go to a quick break from some of our sponsors. It's the Men's Mental Health Show. We're with John Millam and myself, Brad Spillane. Back in just a moment, guys.
Every Wednesday afternoon on RBM between 4 and 6pm, Trevor Day presents The Here and Now. Trevor plays rock, soul and R&B each week, all presented around a feature artist, an album of the week and plenty of new releases. There's local gigs and event news and some quirky spoken word in Poets' Corner. There's something for everyone, Here and Now, every Wednesday between 4 and 6pm on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM. The Here and Now.
Welcome back to the Men's Mental Health Show. Brad Spillane here, and we're brought to you by Mounties Group, of course, good mate Dale Hunt, and a new sponsor that's throwing in some honey for us called Kaiora, K-A-I-O-R-A, Kaiora Honey, from New Zealand. I think it's my cousin's business, so I thought I'd just chuck that in there. Well, before we went to the break, John, we're talking about... Well, essentially, getting help. Really, let's. What we're here to talk about today is why do we struggle so much, or how do we go about getting help? Mm. And because a lot of the time for us is, well, certainly from my experience, you know, if I look back at the times I got help, I often said to myself, "Geez, I wish I did this 6 months earlier."
Yeah. Almost every time.
Almost every time. Because I wouldn't have had to go through so much more, or go further down that pit.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons, I reckon. These are my opinions. So I'll tell the listener, right, they're entitled to disagree completely. Because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, right, everything is so complex and individual. Right? I find that interesting that, we tend to, block up some of, getting help.
Yeah.
Right. In a sort of universal way. Why don't men get help? Why don't women, do this and what? But every individual has their, has their own circumstance, motivation. And it's important to think about individuals, right? But there are patterns. So that said, there are patterns that we should go to. I'd like to start answering that by perhaps answering the why would we need help?
Oh, okay.
Question. And that goes back to what we were saying. We are a system. Right? And I don't think... I would like people out there listening to think of one circumstance where they weren't... where they achieved something or took on a challenge, in life, work, whatever, where they didn't have any input of any type.
Like setting up an IKEA kit without reading the instructions?
But the instructions are written for you.
Yeah, but...
they even give you...
I understand that.
But IKEA even give you a key. It doesn't fit most things.
But I'm one of those blokes that says, I can do this without that, first of all.
Isn't that interesting? Why would you choose to take on an IKEA kit?
I always get it wrong.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So you choose to put together... something that is almost indecipherably complex.
Does this contradict itself? It's not because I think I know everything. It's because I think I'm good enough to do it without reading. I think I have the skills to do it without looking at the instructions. And yet I always get it wrong.
So why do you think you have the skills to do it? Have you?
Because I've done it before.
You've done some before. But
not successfully.
Well, see, isn't that interesting, right? So you know you're likely to fail.
Yeah.
If you do it by yourself. But you do the same process again. What drives you to do that?
Now you sound like Gary Sims. you're still making the same mistakes. But it's true.
We do. And now,
it's like a self-punishment. It is.
Well, it's one of those things where I think we have to understand that we have a intrinsic focus around, why we're doing it, but we're actually being influenced by external sources. Right. So at the stigma, like you have a picture of yourself, a perspective of someone who can do IKEA furniture.
Sure.
You know, and that might, you know, there might be, if you're cognitive about it, you might have this vision of sitting down and twisting a few knots and then it being this, you know, beautiful stand of furniture there that's, you know, shiny.
It's meant to look like a table, ends up looking like a pyramid.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And it took seconds and, you know, everybody's happy and there's no leftover bits.
Yes,
right?
Sure.
The truth in my experience is that's never been the truth for me and I'm hearing it's not for you. Why I persist pushing that is because there's a cost of not believing that.
Ah, and okay.
The cost is I have to accept that I'm not a rugged, competent, handy, you know, dexterous, clever, powerful man who eats putting IKEA furniture together for breakfast and then goes on to conquer the world.
Yeah.
It's an unreasonable reaction to a set of societal memes and norms that are being imposed on me by other things. I don't know of anyone who would fit that norm of being able to throw together an IKEA kit in seconds.
Yeah. You know, I watched a thing the other day on Ronaldo, you know, the soccer player.
Oh, yeah.
And you think he's got most of his boxes in the right order.
Yeah, well, that's the impression, isn't it? Yeah.
So he invites, which he's caught up with it a few times, and he's quite open about it, Jordan Peterson to come over.
Right.
You know, and when, you know, with Ronaldo's permission, Jordan says, well, he's a very intelligent guy. You know, he's very successful, but he continues to want to know more. He's continuing to question why am I doing this wrong or how do I change this or how can I be better at this in my life, which is in turn it's affecting the way his longevity to continue to play football in his mid-30s. And that's admirable, isn't it? I mean, because some of the most...
It's grace.
It's grace.
Yeah, gratitude, respect, attention, curiosity and emotional flexibility or agility. Yeah, so... You
it's
know,
massive, isn't it?
It's a mindset that will get you through... situations of life and continuous growth in a way that is, you know, better than your average Joe.
And that's a bloke who's a role model to millions of people, I'd imagine, you know, on and off the pitch.
But he's not going around... It's going back to that linking issue. Yeah. He's solving problems, so he's a role model, right? We look at him and go, I want to be Ronaldo, right? Mm. And then you go, oh, well, he plays soccer. Mm. He talks to Jordan Peterson. Mm. He, you know, looks after himself. He eats well. He exercises, right? All of those things are true. So we have a picture, a purpose, and we have content, but we don't know how do I do that?
Yes, yeah.
How do I link that? Yeah. So how do I turn the content into something that changes me? There's no link. And it's the same. The norms that men choose to operate to, or it is a choice, but often it's an unconscious drive. So we're not even being conscious about the choices. We're just following what we're expected to follow. We're perceiving ourselves the way we are expected to perceive ourselves, right? We are listening to the advice or sanction of others because they have authority under these things that we haven't chosen, right? So, you know, Ronaldo, we know Ronaldo is worthy of following as a role model because, you know, he ticks the boxes of the norm, not because we've met him and he seems like a really great guy. Now, Ronaldo might be a positive role model because, you know, the boxes that he does tick, right, he's a good exemplar of. He has, you know, virtue and morals and, you know, work ethic and all that stuff.
Sure.
But is he any less, you know, is he any more of a role model than someone like, you know...
Yourself.
A bloke, I met a bloke just recently who spends almost every minute of his life quietly and in small ways and, you know, unspectacular ways helping people. He would be up to probably 85% of his time. When he gets up in the morning, He goes down to a place, and so like he'll, here's an example, he'll turn up, he's got an arrangement with the local prison. He turns up, and when people are released, he sits down, has a coffee for them, and tells them, asks them, and helps them decide how they're going to solve some of their immediate problems.
Wow.
Now, does he get recognised for that?
Well, I don't think he's doing it to be recognised, is he?
He's not. No. But, you know, there isn't a single person out there who probably even knows his name.
Yeah.
And they certainly don't choose him as a role model. And in fact, the reason I know about this man is because he's been struggling because he's being a 70-year-old man has been evicted from his home, right, of 25 years, right, by a 23-year-old real estate agent who sent him a letter saying, you know, you will report to me and asking for money for tea towels that were, you know, damaged or something. It's just like... It's outrageous that we comply with these perceptions, these norms, and but we don't think about them. So to go back to that first question, the why we would seek help is because it's actually the way humans do best.
Yeah.
So it's not unreasonable and it's not wrong and it's not a failure to need support.
No.
Because, you know, when we achieve something, we don't acknowledge, but it happened that we were supported. It's when we are struggling that we pretend that we can do it all ourselves and we feel a failure and we feel shame, which locks us off away from doing the most appropriate and easiest thing, which is to get some backup.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the challenges of that too. One of the reasons why we don't seek help is because the cost of seeking help has always been seen as quite high.
Yeah, sure. And that's, you know, we've spoken about that before. When a lot of blokes say, if I see a psychologist, a counsellor, a life coach,
shame.
The first thing is, how much is it going to cost and how much is he going to bugger me up? But that's really the crucial thing.
Yeah, and even the money isn't the most important thing. We'll see it as a cost to to my reputation.
Yeah,
I could lose my job if people found out I was not complying with all those norms, right? Which are one compliance with.
Yeah, but
right, I think the 70-year-old who's being evicted is the most amazing bloke I've ever met. Right, and I could care less about Ronaldo.
Yeah.
You know, but the world sees it the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, this is a nobody and Ronaldo's everything, right? But in the end, Ronaldo's just being a good bloke.
Well, he also
kicks a few balls into a net.
Well, he wasn't doing it to improve his game or, as I said, the longevity. It was the fact that he spends a lot of time away from home was one of them. He realises that he could be a better dad. How do I go about that? He was questioning that himself before reaching out and asking.
So we should take, you know, the linking info we need from Ronaldo is the why he's talking to Jordan Peterson.
Yeah,
the fact that he wants to be a better dad, a better person, a better bloke, a better community member.
Sure.
That's the link. So what do I take out? Not the fact that if I train really hard, I'll end up with abs and play soccer, right? What I need to take out is Ronaldo's modelling a way I can engage with improving myself to be a benefit to others.
Sure.
So if I take, you know, what I would take out of that example would be, okay, so he sought help to improve his ability to parent. Okay, I'm having troubles with my kids, so maybe I should give someone a call.
Yeah. See, and that's right. It's influential.
That's the link.
Yes.
But it's not influential if people don't see the link, if they just see the model.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Oh, this amazing bloke who's, attractive and capable and rich.
Yeah.
Right, I want to be like him. They don't think, well, being like him means asking someone over to tell me how to be a better dad. They think, oh, it's about getting a car or, having money or playing sport or whatever. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course it does.
We miss the real power of role models. And it's fact, even on a small level, you see someone, they give you advice, right? They tell you what worked for them. They don't give you the link back to you. How are you going to implement that advice? That's why advice is pretty much useless.
Yeah.
I can. I'm telling you stuff I know from my own experience and research works, right? But unless I give the people I'm talking to some sense of how they can implement it, right? Then I'm just flapping my gums.
Yeah, you know, I often get from my old man, you know, it's wonderful you're reaching out and helping other people, but I'm concerned about you. That's a common thing I get from my dad. And it's funny because I contradict myself, and he's right in many ways. No. I often say, you know, when I'm talking to someone, how's your sleep? You know, that's one of the first questions I ask, because it's a question that I've been asked by various types of physicians or people that have, you know, I've reached out to.
Yeah.
And yet my sleep's bloody terrible. Yeah. You know, I probably sleep less than most people I know.
Yeah.
But yet I'm willing to give that advice of saying to people, get yourself into a sleep pattern. I don't bloody do it myself. You know,
well,
what
the power of lived experience is not that you're that you are,
you
know, the complete package. The power of lived experience is, you know,
from experience
specifically around the impact of not getting enough sleep, how it can mess you up.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you have the bits that are messed up as a result of that.
Yeah.
Right. So, that's the myth of the norm, right? I have to be beautiful and perfect before anyone will listen to me. But the important thing isn't the outcome, it's the link. What you're telling them is, get sleep, consequences of, here's how to do it. Why should you believe me? Because I have been through it. I can speak on a credible basis,
and that's
because I've lived that experience. So when I, you know, like these role models, right, even Jordan Peterson's book, you know, like this,
I'm reading the 12 rules for
life, the 12 rules,
yeah,
and some, you know, that's kind of linky, you know it's got some stuff about it. So why Jordan Peterson has credibility is because he makes his position, his understanding, his perspective accessible to other people, so they can see through their own eyes that perspective. That's what great influences do.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And you can have great, capable influencers who are telling you a load of crap. That's why, you know, a whole bunch of people on TikTok are running around really damaging a whole bunch of, you know, young people everywhere with their, but because they're so effective at linking, right? They say, look, here's the great stuff I've got. And then they don't, like in the past, you know, parents go, oh, you've got to do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they go, oh, here's the steps to take so you can be like me. That's the different perspective. So what I would say is, like, so, you know, why we seek help? Because it's absolutely the way humans get a better result. Yeah.
And that help doesn't have to be professional. You can start off just by talking, you know, in a confidential but open discussion with a good mate or your partner.
Absolutely. The person has to have some intention to listen. And some ability to hold their judgment.
Yeah.
So I think talking to anyone is good. Talking to someone who knows how to listen is quantumly better, and talking to somebody who has made it a passion to listen is the best.
Yes.
Right?
But I think you've also got to prepare yourself too. I mean, look, you know, yesterday I told you today I'm in a world of pain at the moment with my back. Yeah. You know, I was talking to the chap where I live, and he said, got to get up, you've got to do it. And he's right. You know, he's saying, and I've been getting up and I go take the dog for walks, but I'm taking the dog for walks at midnight or 1 a.m. a lot of the time. But effectively, he's right. So what I'm saying there was, when I put to him, geez, I'm in a, when he asked me how I was prepared to accept he's going to come back with something as to his reason why.
Yeah.
Because invertedly, well, we try to fix, we try to give our opinion. Yeah. Whether that's right or wrong, it's entitled to it. I've put myself out there and asked it, haven't I?
Yeah. Well, what you're doing is you're filling the gap because you've know what to do. So, you know, when we go back and look at that question, why don't men get help? One of the reasons is they don't have the process for getting help. So if I'm a bloke with a bad back and some bloke says, how are you going? I go, oh, I'm in a bit of pain. And he goes, oh, you've got to get up and move it. I go, yeah, thanks, mate.
Yeah, mate. Yeah,
I walk away.
Something.
What you did was you closed the gap for him. So his advice, you already knew, right? But you didn't turn it into a shut up. You were vulnerable, said, look, I'm in a lot of pain. I've got some stuff going on. You opened yourself
up. He's not wrong.
No. And you listened to him, even though he delivered, you know, I often call it like, I'm sorry for telling you how to suck eggs.
Yeah, that's right.
But what you did was, you were the experienced one. You used process, to have that exchange. Essentially, you were carrying that whole exchange. One of the reasons is most men don't have that experience or process under their belt. They don't have the skill to open up and accept advice delivered badly.
Or drop the ego.
Yeah.
Or go into a discussion without ego.
Or be flexible enough to go, well, that guy meant well and he's got some kernel of truth.
Yes.
Because that's next level stuff, right? You've got to practice that. Every man can access it if they practice it. But what I was doing as a bloke with the skill, the reason people reach out to you is because you act like that when they tell you stuff. So you're a better listener. And, you know, I think last week we talked about lodestones.
Yes.
Part of being a lodestone is you are a better listener. Now, that is purely skill. It's not like people have natural, you know, some people always seem to tell me stuff, right? But you can practice the skill of listening and suspending judgment and being available. One simple cue is when a guy needs help, if you tell him, he will shut down.
Right.
But if you ask him for help, he will begin to open up. So if you've got a bad back, I go, you know, if I need some help, I go, you know, you tell me you've got a bad back, I go, oh, mate, can you help me understand how that's limiting your day?
What you're doing day-to-day work.
Yeah. Can you share with me, can you tell me what you can't get done today because of that? And then are you drawn to say, oh, yeah, thinking about stuff that could be practically supported.
And you're not giving by asking that, oh, poor me, oh, you poor bloke. You're not giving the sympathy. It's more empathetic what you're doing is asking.
It's curiosity, it's empathy, connecting. So if I go back, you know, it's a number of C's. If I go back to that question, you say, you tell me you've got a bad back, and I go, mate, you've got to get up and get exercise, do better core exercises.
Sure.
That's your response. Even you are going to go, okay. Yeah, thanks for telling me.
Yeah.
But that...
Well done, Scoop.
Yeah, well done, Scoop. Yeah. So what it's... There are techniques where I can invite... See, all what happens then is if I say, can you help me explain... can you help me by understanding what you need as a consequence? And then you tell me, and then I can go... Wow, so you've got to get the car to so-and-so. Well, that's going to be difficult with your back. Any chance I can take it?
Yeah. Wow.
And then you've made it easy for someone to accept help. The reason, the other side of that is, so that's what a supporter can do. The other side of it is what you demonstrated, which is a bloke can learn to do that dialogue, side of dialogue in their head. So when someone says, do more core exercises, you go, oh, yeah. So while I'm making an appointment at the gym, would you mind taking my car down the road, right? Or something, closing. And the reason we do that is because people do want to help.
Yes.
Right? And they're making that inappropriate comment for the same reasons that they would make something useful or open, right? But they just don't know. So one of the things that we need to learn as a bloke is why I need help is because that's the way we get stuff done in a better way. And two, because other people want to help, but they don't know how.
They don't know how. That's
so if I go back to my every, you know, my number one theme is service. How can I serve somebody by helping them understand how they can help me?
Okay.
So I'm not actually, you know, letting the side down. I'm not, you know, being weak. I'm actually helping others by help by allowing them to help me. And I don't know if that works for everyone, but it works for me.
It works for me. You know, often I learn and work things out a lot easier when I talk to other people about some of their issues.
Yeah.
I find it a lot easier to, I guess, you know, spend that time at the House of Mirrors myself, having a long, hard look at myself. When I can hear other people working through similar things, I go, oh, hang on, that might work for me.
Yeah. It's the power of the group too. Men are meant to sit around in a group. So I do groups with men.
That's what I do at the table, yeah.
Yeah, and I see, you know, I do groups every week with men.
Sure.
And, you know, there's just one that comes to mind on Sunday, right, where like they're all experienced group members, right? So often you get a new person in and they know the fit. But a couple of them were going through, you know, had just had stuff come up and they were still processing it. And it was literally, you know, the other members of the group just shut up and listen to a guy vent. Now, he knew that what he was saying was not a good choice of action, right? He wanted to run this and he wanted to fight this and, you know, wanted to seek justice.
Prevention.
But because the group had experience, had practice being a group and sharing that time, you could see him run down.
Yeah.
Right? And all of that energy of, you know, and passion and aggression was slowly draining out as he vented.
Yeah.
And he took as long as he wanted to get to go from there. And by the end of it, he was going, I suppose I could do that.
Right. He was working it out.
Yeah, it had gone through.
It's almost magic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, sort of.
So, and at the end of it, regardless of where he went there, whatever decision, and of course, then the group offered some, you know, alternatives that were acceptable. Oh, look, you need to make the best decision for yourself. Sure. But, you know, one of the things I was thinking that came to mind was this, right? Mm. So, you know, we were offering things rather than, you know, telling things. But regardless of that, whatever, if he chose no input from anyone else, at that point he had moved himself because of the power of the group accepting his right to share and vent. He'd moved himself from a place of walls to he'd open the gate. So he could invite other things in to change, to develop options, or he could, you know, walk through it himself. So the other thing I just wanted to, you know, with knowing that, you know, we're running out of time, the other thing is if you have something going really wrong.
Right.
So I talk about situational distress as being the major issues for men. Of course, you know, you'll most language in the press or wherever, they'll talk about mental illness. I think mental illness is a progressive process, right? Immediately you bump into something wrong, and then that can, you know, if it's not dealt with, it can escalate. Life challenges you, you get overwhelmed. Your response is the best, the best response you can work on at the time. But sometimes your body responds and develops, you know, illnesses or quirks or ill health or whatever. That can happen because you're just going through a challenge in life, right? And there are things that it is entirely appropriate to feel miserable about. You know, we've been talking the last few weeks about the loss of a friend. And, you know, we talked about opening up to true emotions, right? But one entirely appropriate emotion is misery, sadness, grief, right? If you lose your job, it's completely normal to feel lost, to feel, an attack on worth or confidence, to grieve, to feel anxiety around what I'm going to do, how am I going to pay the bills, you know, what is this going to do to my reputation? They're all completely normal responses. If you sit there and process those things without, you know, opening up to them, you may get through, but you definitely tuck a bomb away in a drawer.
Yeah. It's a bit like, I guess, you know, my first, after my marriage breakdown, my first stint in hospital as rehab.
Yeah.
The shrink said to me, you've got something called adjustment disorder.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a great one, isn't it?
I've been given adjustment disorder label.
Right. Well, that's really, really good, Scoop. But yeah. What do we do about it? Yeah. You know, that was pretty much what I said.
Good on you. Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
So now you've told me what it is. That's good and well. I mean,
how does this help?
We could call it ABC disorder. Yeah, it makes no difference to me.
Yeah.
What do I do about it? How do we go about this? And that's, you know, like it's because I saw something the other day where someone had put it up on their social page. I've got adjustment disorder. Well, you know, and it wasn't a criticism. I sort of said to myself, well, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
It's almost like, well, now I know what it is. Oh, that's it. I'm better.
Yeah, well, see, it's almost the label.
It's the label that's going to kill it.
Once the label is given, right, here's an area that this is like what men tend to do. I've seen quite a lot, right, that is actually anti-help.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They get a label and they sit back and say, well,
that's my excuse.
What are you going to do about it? Yeah. They look to the psychologist and go, well, you've given me a label, now fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, all healing is done inside.
It's inside, yeah.
Right, yeah. And it's crazy. His label. How does that make it his? Like, it's not even helpful sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it can be, right? And of course, the therapist will contain. He'll have information, right? Mm. You know, he'll have protocols. He'll have experience. He'll have awareness of research. He'll have stuff that's useful.
Yeah, and invariably, he's going to throw that question back on you anyway.
Well,
they do a lot,
and he'll have an expectation of working with you, right? Now that may or may not be the best thing. That's up, you know. Individuals can assess that, but the first thing they need to do is to realize the label makes no difference to the challenge.
Ah,
right. It's their situation, their system, and their response to all of those things that got them into that place. You know, mental illness isn't something, you know, stamped on you, you know, and it's like, oh, one in four, you one, two, three, stamp, one, two, stamp.
Yeah.
No, you know, mental illness is a consequence of doing something, living, learning, encountering challenges and obstacles and trauma and all sorts of circumstances that will change you or that will fire up something that's been dormant or whatever, right? So if it's a complex and significant mental illness, it always had some level of catalyst. Now, no, people don't talk about it. You know, clinicians don't say, well, let's go back and work out, what the process of why this kicked in now.
Right.
They might go back to circumstances where they look at what might have been an influence, like childhood trauma or
childhood,
but those situations, you know, like they're done, and situational distress is only relieved by actions we take in the present, not by reviewing experiences in the past, right? And even mental illness can be improved by how we contribute to engaging with our therapist and our protocols for therapy, and the other other co-related activities. So if you know, meditation doesn't cure your schizophrenia, but it helps you be a better, stronger person emotionally and psychologically, and that will help your cure. Meditation can't cure anxiety, social anxiety or adjustment disorder, but it can help you become a more aware, more balanced, more connected human, and all of those things will improve your ability to react.
To be able to get things organised.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's those nuances, those linking behaviours, you know, working through with in your systems, building and reconnecting with your systems people, right, whether it's, you know, for family of origin or if it's people who are important to you or people you've lost that you want, you know, that are unresolved, right, those kind of things, they don't cure you. They're part of you becoming a person who is open to healing.
Yeah.
Right? It's like sleep. Yeah. If you sleep, you wake up, you know, it doesn't change you, but it does give you maximum resource to make the changes.
So it's absolutely.
So it's a perspective thing. I don't know if this is of any use to anyone, but the idea is you have the power, but all of these things are useful, but none of these things are total, right? Mm. There's no red pill or blue pill. What it is let's maximize. But by the same token, if I, you know, don't do the exercise I need, you know, that, you know, everyone online is telling me the exercise is the absolute bee's knees, and if I don't jump in an ice bath and do 100K by morning, I'm going to, you know, be awful, and that's not true. I may gain stuff out of doing an ice bath and racking up the Ks, but I don't cure stuff. That's me and a whole bunch of other things. So could I meditate? Could I eat well? Could I have great social connections and not do an ice bath? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm still going to get through some problems. We're all different. We solve the problems with our resources, maximizing our ability to tap into our talents, skills, energy, strengths, and experiences. That will improve our ability to respond to life, developing. But it doesn't guarantee anything.
No, no.
It's a challenge.
And as long as we have that outlook before we get into it, it's going to bring about probably a better outlook anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and one of the ways we can help maximize all of those things. Yeah. It's other people who explain to us our strengths.
Yes.
It's other people who point out our experiences, point out our resources. It's other people who share encouragement, who share confirmation, who share confidence. It's other people who give us the benefit of their strengths, skills, and experience. Right? And all of that improves our ability to respond to challenges, whether it's mental illness, situational distress, just a bad day.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, well said, man.
That's why we seek help.
Yeah.
Because other people are the key.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's spot on. Yeah, I like it, mate. Well, we're coming up 12:15. I think we've covered a lot of what we need. When are you coming back? I think we write down. I think you're back on the 6th, or is it the 13th?
No, you've got someone's coming on the 6th.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got the Walkers coming up on the 6th from Springwood. Right. It's their 2-year anniversary or something. Those guys are getting 150 people.
The Penrith Walkers?
No. So there's the Penrith Walkers, which is enormous. I mean, it was one of the first. Let's, you know,
well, they've had 300 people.
Yes. No, they're an enormous group, and it's similar to like what Shannon Nevin does with the Walk and Talk for Life. We're talking about wonderful things.
So Shannon's in a number of places down south Manly.
He's going across the country, I think, at the moment. Wow. He's now in Queensland. These guys are Penrith. But this mob at Springwood have put together a group. They're now in the second year and they're getting, you know, over 100 blokes joining in. And it's also important to note, there's a guy that's also a presenter here. His alias name is Buster Chai or Andrew Wilson.
Right.
Wonderful bloke.
Yeah.
And he does Mid-Mountains Walk and Talk. So these things are growing exponentially, for men and the betterment of, just that exercise and that connection of blokes getting out there and talking and getting rid of the ego and sharing. It's a wonderful.
It's that, the question, why would you seek help? However you find it, right, whether it's a walk and talk or a men's table or a specific group, there's a lot of groups out there. All of them are good. All of them are an option. Explore them so you find one that you can connect to.
Yeah.
Well, go to them all, right?
Yeah, right? As many as you can.
It's interesting because I think walk and talk is a great way. Like, it's a link because men understand that physical activity and the purpose of it. And the talk is an example of saying, well, I've got something else to learn and practice, right, which is connecting with people, right?
100%.
I think as a community we need to go to the next level, which is turn that talk into care conversations, right, and then build a longevity. So it's not just someone I bump into at a walk and develop an acquaintance, which is really positive and enjoyable,
yeah.
we start to link up into small groups, accountability groups or mentoring arrangements,
yeah.
and we start to build the depth of yeah. that conversation
yeah.
so that I can share things, you know, at home, men are connecting, 100 men are going yeah. to a walk and talk because home might be good,
yes,
but I'm not getting everything I need there to yeah. keep me emotionally strong as a man, right? Right. So I go to a walk and talk yeah. where there's, or a men's table or groups yeah. or whatever, and there's another level of experience.
Yeah.
And then I would propose to blokes that you keep practicing, yes. keep exploring, keep seeking, yeah. Yeah. because there is another level beyond that mm. where mm. we start to connect and really exchange valuable mm. information mm. in being a man. And I think it's about, you know, we talked about maturity earlier.
Mm.
I think that is starting to, that goes when you're becoming not just a mature man, you reach elder status.
Yes.
Which yes. is where you are a wise man.
Wise man.
Right.
You become a wizard. Just had a message come in. Yesterday was a full-on day and I've tuned into the show for a balanced, wise perspective. Brilliant discussion, boys. Stuff I need to hear. Thanks so much, Spillo and John. Oh, it's from the Muzz. Oh. So Muzz is tuned in. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, oh, mate, when he says he's had a bad day, I could only imagine what it must have yeah. been like. But, mm. mate, good on you, mate. Yeah. I'll send an energetic thought for calm and...
Yeah, I'll give him a call after the show.
Compassion. But
then I've had another message. Another message where I've obviously made a promise to someone. Hey, Brad, are we getting together for a cycle this afternoon? Well, how do I get out of that one? Well, I don't think I've got to do something about that.
Yeah.
John, thanks, man.
No worries.
I'll see you in a couple of weeks anyway, mate.
We answered the questions?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And if you've got any questions, of course, you can fire away. You can get John on John Millham, M-I-L-H-A-M, through his Facebook page. How else can they get there?
Mate, email John at jmcoaching.com.au or my mobile 0422-672-049.
There you go. Wonderful. You can also get me on 0404-077-666, but best to call John, I think, if you want the right answers. If you want confusing
no,
ones,
mate, you've come out
far worse than what you were, then
no,
give me a
mate,
call.
You know, it's a range of perspectives. Your lived experience,
I've got the lived ones.
But it's interesting because, like, it'd be interesting too if people engage with the Men's Mental Health Radio Show Facebook page if a question's yeah. there and so on.
Yeah, yes, yeah. certainly send them away. I mean, yeah. there's a couple of questions I should really do a bit more of this, but there's a couple of questions I've noticed through some of the podcast pages where people have listened into where they've, you know, and I've not done that. I've not responded to that. In fact, one of them was written 9 months ago, I think, on one of the ones I looked on Google.
Yeah.
But if you've got anything directly you'd like to ask, you can...
You know what I'd like to ask too? Like, obviously, people out there are encountering their own challenges,
sure.
right?
Sure.
And, yeah, we spoke today about everybody's unique challenges.
Yeah.
So there's themes, but I would love to hear the unique challenges. So if they have something that they'd like our...
Yeah, or a topic for us to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, just to, you know, to yeah. throw around in this context, right? Sure. You know, we don't give advice to people, you know, that we don't see or whatever,
yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, who don't, you know, but yeah, I'm happy to take on trying to sound knowledgeable and relevant for someone's a topic that someone suggested.
And it's up to the individual to take what they'd like, you know, with your wisdom and, you know, learnings and many, many years of being a coach. I think lived experiences for me, I think, you know, when Muzz is on, you've got his professional experience.
There's a lot of lived experience in this room.
Yeah, absolutely.
But especially with those guys.
Yeah.
The thing I would, and that's a beautiful way to end up the, you know, when I offer this, I'm not coming from a guru perspective. I, you know, like most of the wisdom I've hard won, right?
Yeah.
So it's relevant to me and my circumstances. And I just say to people out there, you know, take, you know, I offer this in the spirit that, you know, this is my experience, but you're welcome to use whatever you want
sure.
or reject it, right? Mm. Because everybody's different and they have their own perspective.
Mm.
But I would also ask them to begin to review their own experience and say, hey, there's lessons in this. Is there something, first of all, that I can, you know, highlight that I use that works? And then, you know, maybe think about some of the ways they can connect and share with others.
Sure.
because society needs people who are sharing kindness and wisdom rather than hate and division.
Speaking of which, we've got the wonderful Penny Holbrook joining us next week. And she's bringing on a guest. I think his name's Matt. I could be wrong. But anyway, I've got a down here. I'll do a pre-show post. But it's great to have Penny. You've known Penny, of course.
Speaking of sharing wisdom, Penny is fantastic at that.
It's been a minute since she's been. I think it's been well over 12 months. I like having Penny come on. She's going to talk about a few things that she does. She comes up and stays for a couple of nights.
So. She's involved in everything.
I know. Wonderful. Wonderful being. Anyway, Men's Mental Health Show, thanks to Mounties, thanks to all manufacturing personnel and Kai, Aura, Honey. And John, thanks, man. See you in a...
Spillo, absolute joy as always, mate.
Thanks for those that have written in and phoned in and left comments. Remember, just to be kind, let's not be so quick to judge. And we'll see you next week.
Be safer.
Yeah. All the best, guys.
Cheers.